Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report from Truth for Health Foundation. This is Dr. Lee for America, here with another team of our whistleblowers who are bringing you the truth about the lies, deceptions, and all of the assaults on our way of life, your freedom, and your life. For such a time as this, we are here to bring you truth, hope, and solutions. Check out our website, www.truthforhealth.org, for medical help, legal help, and all of the other resources. Join us in our Faith Over Fear seminars each Tuesday night via Zoom at 8 o'clock Eastern Time every week. And now, here is your host for today.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Whistleblower Report Military Update for the Truth for Health Foundation. The dialogue and views expressed here today are our own, do not represent the Department of Defense or any entity therein. I'm your host, Dixon Brown, a Senior Chief Petty Officer in the Navy, Special Operations Independent Duty Corpsman or Medic with 18 years of service. Our co-hosts today are Mark Basha, prior enlisted staff and CO, and now first lieutenant in the United States Army. He's a preventive medicine officer and an entomologist with 17 years of service. He was court-martialed earlier this year for refusing to comply with experimental technologies. Our second co-host today is David Beckerman, a major in the United States Air Force, a pilot who is currently on hold in military school pending the adjudication of his religious accommodation requests. I'll remind the audience today that to date, none of these religious accommodations for the COVID-19 vaccine have been approved, except for the unique circumstances, such as where service members preparing to leave the service on their terminal leave or their skills bridge receive potential religious accommodation requests or approvals. And our guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller. He was separated after 19 years and 3 months, just a mere 9 months short of being able to collect his pension for his service to this great nation. This separation was a result of refusing to comply with these emergency use authorization COVID-19 shot mandates and refusing to subject his personnel to these experimental shots. Prior to separation, Lieutenant Colonel Miller was serving as battalion commander of the 101st Airborne Division, a prestigious unit and position that is infamous amongst all branches of the military. And up front, I'd like to thank and remind our regular listeners, because without thanking you and discussing and sharing this content, information would never multiply and spread. So thank you for listening. Please continue to share and discuss this information with those within your spheres of influence. It's an honor to be sitting here around the proverbial table with these men. Their combined years of faithful service between all of us is over 65 years. The 65 years represents everything that is good and virtuous about military sacrifice. Each of us coming from different backgrounds and experiences, willing to give it all up to stand for our beliefs. Each of us has an exemplary track record of promotions, deployments, special appointments, awards, high performance marks, all of which are the antithesis of what we are now facing. We are now outsiders being threatened and charged with misconduct. And I know and I speak for all of us when I say I would have never imagined that my career would end up this way. I never imagined I'd be facing persecution for my convictions. So it's without further ado, I would like to turn it over to Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller to tell his story. And then we'll ask him a few questions and highlight the type of leader he is and the type of moral convictions that led him to this point in time. Thank you. It's over to you, sir.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. I feel like I'm in the company of heroes here. So, I appreciate you guys having me on and I'm honored to be with you. Let me start by making just one correction. So I was actually not separated. I resigned, it is a notable difference, but at the same time, it was one of these situations where one or the other was going to happen. So, I mean, some people could say that basically all I did was say, hey, you can't fire me. I quit. But in my mind, it was also, morally the stronger position, but I just want to make that one correction that, I did resign as opposed to getting separated, but, you're right. So I was a battalion commander in the 101st Airborne Division, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, which is an extremely storied division. Most people, even outside of the military, have probably heard of it, for various reasons, right? I was very proud to be part of the division and still am proud to have been part of the division, just like I'm proud to have been a battalion commander, even though it was short-lived. So for those who are perhaps less aware of what that position means in the military, when you are chosen as a battalion commander, typically you will hold that position for 2 years. I was in command for 4.5 months before I was relieved, and I'll lay out exactly what happened there. But obviously my command was very short-lived. The other thing that's interesting to know, just from a greater contextual awareness standpoint, is the average officer in the Army, if he commands a battalion, and obviously it is a mark of distinction to get chosen as a battalion commander. I mean, that's why I'm proud to have been selected. I mean, nothing about my situation has changed the way in which I feel about the Army or about having been a battalion commander. My contempt is directed at those that are in charge of the military and the Army right now and that are ruining the institution. My contempt is not with the institution itself. And, I'll explain that as we go forward. But I was very happy to be chosen for command. And as I was saying, generally speaking, the average officer will get chosen for battalion command at around 18 years of service, unless he's prior service before having received his commission. So what that means is for an officer who has been promoted on time, but never promoted early, that was my case. I was never promoted early. So I took command right at the 18-year point, and that would be pretty typical, which means a successful command would get that officer, not just through command, but also to the 20-year mark, which of course would qualify him for his pension. So in my case, when I was relieved of command, I was at approximately 18 and a half years. A couple more months passed. I submitted my resignation paperwork once the directive came out from the Army, which basically stipulated that the Army wanted an entirely vaccinated force. That directive came out on January 31st, 2022. And so I said, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to resign. I see that the Army leadership and DoD leadership is not going to come to its senses. It is going to continue to press forward with a decision that I believe is not just bad policy, but also entirely unlawful, deliberately destructive of military readiness. And I think at this point, there's no other way to categorize it. Even if I were to view it as charitably as possible and attribute it to gross negligence and incompetence a year ago, I can no longer do that because I believe that there's just too much evidence to entertain alternative explanations. At this point, I fully believe that it is willful destruction of military readiness by the leaders across the board of DoD and the various respective services. And so I just said, hey, I got to go. I can't be a part of this. So I got to leave. And when my last day in the Army officially was September 15th, 2022. So just, a couple months ago. And that gave me a total of 19 years, 3 months, 15 days of active service. And, I don't regret it. I mean, I don't like being in the situation that I was placed in, but I don't regret it. And I have to be able to look myself in the mirror. I have to be able to sleep at night. And I don't know how a lot of particularly commanders across DoD are able to do either of those, look themselves in the mirror or sleep at night. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how to give them the benefit of the doubt any longer, you know? And so sometimes when I give these interviews, I'm pretty hard on my peers because it's kind of like, hey guys, you are exhibiting a lot of cowardice, you know? And I just don't know how else to characterize it at this point. And of course I have friends that are still battalion commanders to this day. And a lot of them are good guys. It's not that they're not good guys, but it's that you guys are now engaged in something that is totally unlawful. And if you don't understand that at this point, it's because you're deliberately keeping yourself in the dark, because there's so much evidence now that it is impossible. Unless you lack the critical reasoning faculties that your job requires, in which case you would be disqualified for that position. But if you have the critical reasoning faculties that your job requires, then I have to believe that it's cowardice that keeps you from looking into it more. And in turn, you convinced yourself that you can just go along to get along, and that, hey, maybe the Army got this wrong, but the Army's a massive bureaucracy. They don't always get everything right. And all of these nonsensical justifications that I'm sure people are telling themselves in their heads because they don't want to admit to themselves that they're cowards and they're actually working against the institution that they purport to be a part of.
Brad, I got to ask you this. How did we get to this point to where in the Army, we've taken the core values and completely tossed them out the window? From my standpoint, it's just, I mean, it's baffling to me to see that when we look at the core values, and we can go over some of those, and I'd like you to touch on those, but when we look at the core values of the Army, you basically were doing everything you were supposed to be doing and upholding those core values. And yeah, I'd like you to discuss and touch on some of those.
Yeah, sure. By all means.
So the first one being loyalty, right? So your thoughts on the core value of loyalty, right? Which is the Army's core value. It's the first one listed. Mm-hmm. And what that says, and relate that to your situation and what you were doing and what you're actively, what I believe you're actively still doing to this day.
Right.
I don't believe you've stopped.
Yeah. So what I would say is, the Army values, we talk a lot about this in the Army. What it's supposed to be is, you know, a list of values that the Army believes that you either have when you enter the ranks, or the Army will help imbue this within you, because without these values, we can't have a force that will operate morally. And that in turn would erode teamwork. It would erode cohesion, patriotism, et cetera. So the first of the Army values is loyalty. And I think if you look at the definition that the Army has, I believe the first thing it mentions is loyalty to the Constitution. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right. It says it right. I got it right in front of me. It says, bear true faith and allegiance to the U.S. Constitution, the Army, your unit, and other soldiers.
Right.
The Constitution being the first one.
Yeah, great. So let's talk about that real quick. So I have said, and I'm very emphatic about this, I have said before that when I left the military, I left with my integrity intact and my oath to the Constitution unbroken. And I stand by that. And I continue to stand by that. And so there's an order of precedence there. There's a reason why the Constitution is listed first there. And what I would say is across the board, individuals have violated their oath to the Constitution. Now, after the Constitution, it mentions, you know, the Army, you know, your unit, et cetera. I suppose individuals may say, hey, I'm being loyal to the Army. And first of all, I don't even think that's true. No, I don't think you are. I think you've turned your back on the Army, just like you are violating your oath to the Constitution. I think you've convinced yourself that because you're following an unlawful order, you're following the order that came from a man, you think that you're in line with the Army. But I would say your actions are being destructive to the institution. You may be following the orders from a person, but those orders are ultimately destructive to the institution. So that's kind of what I would say about loyalty, is that across the board, I don't think we can say that Army personnel, particularly commanders, are in compliance with that specific Army value.
And I'd have to absolutely agree. I wanna turn it over to David Beckerman for a chance to jump in here and bring out some of these questions. And I wanna remind the audience who David Beckerman is. David Beckerman, if you haven't yet seen it, go down in the show notes and check out his presentation on what the DoD has done. And he lays out an excellent chronological timeline of what has happened with these unlawful mandates. Anyway, over to you, David.
Hey, thanks for that great introduction. Brad, I want to jump on something you mentioned earlier about these commanders being in the dark on purpose. I've had different perspectives on how this whole thing plays out. And I know that we have senior leaders that are pushing this stuff. I have a hard time sometimes believing that the squadron commanders or unit level commanders did this maliciously, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. But as far as being in the dark, I mean, I've went to them. I said, hey, these are the laws that you're violating. These are the issues. Here's black and white letter on the law. What do you say? And a lot of the times, you know what they, I'm sure you know the response. The response was, well, legal cleared it. I mean, you were a commander. So well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is there has to be a time where you step in as a commander where the advisors, you know, legal advisors, you have to tell them, hey, this isn't right. You guys got it wrong. Go back to the drawing board.
Okay. So which JAG officer in DoD has greater authority than the Constitution? And that's a rhetorical question. I mean, clearly, there's no answer. Right. So what I would say to any commander that said that, and I think there are many commanders who say that, first of all, that is a cop-out. Second of all, you are weak. Third of all, you're not demonstrating any moral courage whatsoever. So, you know, and Alex Zek and I had a great interview, and we kind of talked about what it means, particularly for guys who, you know, came through West Point, the honor code and the cadet prayer, et cetera. And what I would say is there are a lot of guys that probably need to take their West Point ring off, or their, you know, Air Force Academy ring off, or your Naval Academy diploma. Tear it off the wall. You don't believe it. You don't believe any of that. You know, I know you've convinced yourself that you do, but you don't. And so there are a lot of people that have had some courageous careers. And I'm not in any way trying to diminish the great things, to include acts of courage, that many people in our military that are wrong on this issue have done correctly and courageously in the past. You know, I believe that, you know, we are more than just the worst thing we've ever done in our lives, you know? And if I was nothing more than the worst thing I've ever done in my life, I probably wouldn't be a good person either. So I'm not here to say that I'm a perfect officer. I've been a perfect officer. What I'm saying is right now, for the vast majority of those who are in the military, this is the hill to die on, metaphorically speaking, you know?
No, I would say
like this is it. What in your career could be more important than this? For the vast majority of people, you know, I mean, there are other individuals who have, again, they have been exemplary in other moments. Some of them have been awarded for courage, and I absolutely 100% applaud that. I'm not diminishing that in any way. But in this issue right now, what are you doing? Like, this is bigger than just COVID, and it's bigger than the military, because this has implications for the country at large.
I've been saying that for a long time, that this is the hill to die on. And for a few, in similar reasons that you say, like, essentially, it's what I'm getting at is it's a historical moment. And I'm almost envious of commanders because they are in the seat during this historical moment. All you had to do was the right thing and you would have been remembered in history. But now what's going to happen is all these guys that were pushing all these unlawful orders, they're going to get forgotten, if not thrown in jail. There's a potential, I believe, in the future that, you know, we have to do this chronologically, methodically. First, we have to prove that there's an unlawful order in the courts. Then we have to prove there was willful intent. And once we get, you know, as it breaks down, I truly do believe that these commanders will one day will be allowed legally to hold them accountable. Right now, I think it's still, you know, on the fence. But you're talking about moral courage and integrity. And I had a question for you leading up to that. And I think I know the answer to this question, but I have to ask it, because I thought about doing what you did. I thought about resigning my commission, and the way resigning my commission was explained to me, it's like, you're basically that moment in time when I raised my hand 12 years ago. If resigning my commission basically erases that moment. So it's a little, is that, am I understanding it correctly? Like it's a little different than just a separation, correct?
So I guess the question may be, there may be some legal nuances there. I will tell you that I resigned rather than being separated for a couple of reasons. Now,
yeah, you're leading to my question. Why resign versus separate? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So on the one hand, I thought it was a morally stronger position. Now, I'm not saying everybody has to do that. I think there's some validity to fighting from the inside, though I personally believe I can actually do a lot more from the outside than on the inside. It, you know, case in point, this right here. But before anybody says that, oh man, this dude is some huge moral stalwart, let me explain a practical reason too. So when this directive came out on January 31st of 2022, it said, if you get separated, or you can resign in lieu of separation. And then there was a rumor going around that if you get separated, it's not going to be an honorable discharge. Now, I think in many cases, that rumor is proven true. I mean, we know of people who have been separated with general discharges, even if they're categorized as general under honorable circumstances. That is not the same thing as an honorable discharge. So in my mind, when I was weighing all of this out, there's the practicality of, okay, I can resign. And I can out the door explain very emphatically why I'm resigning. And I use some very strong language in my resignation letter to the Army. I don't know who read it, maybe just some staff dudes up at HRC, but I hope they read it with the vigor with which it was written, you know? And I basically said that my values, and we just talked about the Army values, you know, my values do not align with the values of the senior leadership of DOD, who I believe are, you know, criminals. I just don't know how else to say it. So I believe at this time, at this juncture, my best course of action is to resign. So that's what I chose to do.
Yeah, I like I said, I was thinking about it. I have a little bit other issues than just COVID. I'll share. I took some trips to Mexico during the lockdowns because I had a significant other stuck down there. And so we always knew that, you know, if they weren't going to get you for COVID, they'd get you for something else. And, you know, now they found it. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, am I in a losing position? Should I just give up? Not, I don't want to say give up, but that's not right. The right language, but should I resign? It's more like self-preservation. Sure. I can resign. I can continue to fight without getting my name dragged through the mud. Cause you know, that's their tactic. If they can't get rid of you, they'll try to find something in your background, they'll try to disgrace you. And you're right. You know, when you put it through that context and look it through that lens, I mean, I think you're right. I think you do get out with your integrity intact, and you know, your name doesn't get dragged through the mud. You're not this refuser. I think, you know, looking at it from your perspective, I think you're correct. It's just, you know, it's a drastic measure, I think. But everybody has their decision calculus. So,
yeah. One thing that you reminded me of is as you were sharing that was so if you look at the next Army value, it's duty. And the immediate question that I would ask is, I mean, duty to whom or what? Because again, we can take it right back to the Constitution. And the problem that I feel like I was placed in, right, is in a functioning society, right, your service to the nation in the military should be right in line with your duty to your country. Those should not be in tension. But I felt like I was in a position where those two were in tension. And so if you put me in a position where I have to choose the Army or the country, there's only one answer there in my mind. That's the country. And again, it goes back to an order of precedence, which is, in my mind, you don't place the military over the country because the military exists to protect the country, not the other way around. If you place the military before the country, in my mind, there's a misalignment of priorities there. I hope that kind of makes sense, but that's kind of the debate that I was having in my own mind. You know, you put me into a situation where the country and the Army are in tension. That should not happen. That means we're in a society that is not functioning properly. But I mean, we live in the real world where that was the situation that I felt like I was placed in. We're still in that situation.
Right. I appreciate you letting me ask that question. It's definitely been on my mind. Like, you know, why take that moment, or like, why take it to that extreme to some people, right?
Yeah. I mean,
not everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly been criticized for it. And the criticism typically falls into two categories. One is, you're dumb. What about your retirement and money? And I don't like that argument, because as soon as you start talking about retirement and pension, blah, 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 you're reducing it all down to money, you know? And so I'm not here to be bought, right? The other criticism is more kind of like a strategic one, or maybe not even a strategic one, but it's kind of maybe more tactical. Like, hey, we're all trying to fight this, but do it from the inside, not from the outside. I think there's some validity there. I don't entirely buy it. My preference is to fight from the outside, but I understand that position for sure.
No, they gave Stu Scheller the same feedback. Oh, why'd you make that video? Why'd you do that? You know, whatever.
Sure.
Everybody has their tactics, but well, let's take a pause there and we'll pick it up when we get back. Thanks.
Yeah. Well said, Brad, David, thank you. That was well said. You know, before we go into the break here, I just want to remind everybody, and I think it's important for the audience to understand that, you know, there are a lot of times you'll hear civilians or other people say, well, you know, you joined the military, you signed on that line. And the reality is that we all volunteered to serve the nation. And just by volunteering, that doesn't mean that we forfeited our innate human rights that are protected by the Constitution. They're extended to service members as well. And, you know, as we kind of go through this as, you know, whistleblowers and people are separated or resigned service members, it kind of turns into a muddy foxhole. And it's tough to discern what is up and what is down. But I'll tell you what, I've met a lot of these whistleblowers, and you don't have to spend all but just a few minutes with them to get a sense for the type of people that they are. And they love this country. And it is their hill to die on, because they see the writing on the wall. They see the concern, and they see what is going to happen if they don't. And it's bigger than their pensions. It's bigger than all this, which is why I think a lot of us are here, which is why a lot of us are continually moving forward with just this awareness. So I want to thank everybody, and we'll go into our break. And when we get back, we will discuss more of kind of the command thought process and peer thought process and some of the other things that are coming up in the near future.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit, often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
This message is from the Truth for Health Foundation. Hi, I'm Dr. Sam Sigloff, a family medicine physician and a major in the U.S. Army. The following are only my opinions. Service members are being coerced to participate in medical experimentation, with over 7,500 service members being discharged for refusing to participate, many of them losing their retirement and medical benefits. There are allegations that the DoD is committing medical fraud, violating the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and violating constitutional rights of service members. Strong men and women stand ready to defend so that you can sleep peacefully through the night. Now we must stand watch over the military so they can sleep peacefully through the night. Please get involved to help protect the military. This message brought to you by the Truth for Health Foundation. For more information, please visit truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org.
And I wanted to thank you for joining us for the Whistleblower Report. I'm your host, Dixon Brown. We have co-hosts Mark Bashaw, David Beckerman, and Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller. Coming back in from the break, we were just discussing kind of the decision made to resign versus fight from within. And Brad, I would just like to ask you, what was the perceptions of your peers as you were moving through this? There had to have been kind of a pivotal point when people's perceptions maybe changed towards you, and how have they changed afterwards? For me personally, I noticed a command relationship change as information started coming out. I get the sense of encouragement. It's just like silent encouragement I'm hearing from people, and they don't want to say anything for fear of reprisal or being stuck like that. But there is an encouragement that I seem to hear, and I've heard it from commanders before, where they say, well, I can leave this with a good conscience because I did X, Y, and Z. How have you seen your peers and those in charge of you? How have you seen that change, and what reflections do you have on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a legitimate one. So I had a really good relationship with my brigade commander, and to some degree, I even had a good relationship with the division commander. Now, again, notwithstanding that, of course, I was still pulled out of command. There's no way that the two of them could have made the decision to leave me in command. I mean, the Army would have said, this dude's got to go. So I don't necessarily blame them for that, but at the same time, I don't have any direct animosity towards them, because they're the ones who happen to have relieved me. But I lump them in with all the others when I say, like, we got a bunch of cowardly commanders all across the force. They don't get a bye, but I had a great relationship with my brigade commander. We did not have a relationship where everything in my command was reduced down to the shot, at least in my interactions with him. I think overall, my legacy of my command will be reduced down to just the shot. But day-to-day interactions, he was a great brigade commander. Let me talk about my brother battalion commanders. So, when you're in a brigade combat team, there are 7 battalions. I was the commander of one of those battalions. I got 6 peers in the same brigade. Fantastic officers. I looked up to every single one of them. Just great guys. But at the same time, to those guys, where are you? I've been out of command for a year, and I have only heard from really one of them who has contacted me on a couple of occasions, mostly by text, though he did call me a couple of days after I got relieved of command, which I was appreciative of. I mean, he called me on the phone and said, hey man, how you doing? And we spoke through it. That was about a year ago, right? Right after I got pulled out. And then throughout the past year, we probably exchanged a couple of texts. But that's been it. The other battalion commanders, I think, have just kind of distanced themselves from me. Now, other peers that I've had across the Army that I've known from earlier in my career, et cetera, a mixed bag. Many of them have kept their distance. Maybe they think I'm a kook, or maybe they think that I'm right and they can't admit that to themselves, and so they just keep their distance. I don't know. And again, maybe it's a mixed bag. However, I have had some individuals reach out to me, and some of them have expressed, I would say, immense concern with the direction that the Army and DOD is headed. And many officers that I thought would go on and make colonel, potentially even go beyond, I mean, just top-notch officers. And many of them have said, hey, instead of going on, I'm going to retire. I'm going to retire, right at 20. And on the one hand, I'm appreciative of that. But on the other hand, it's like, why won't you speak out now? What is keeping you from speaking out now?
Right.
Yep. And here's what I think would be devastating to DOD right now, more devastating than us. And I think we got a group of heavy hitters here. But I think what would be truly devastating right now is if an 06 commander, regardless of whether it's Army, Marines, or wherever, or even an 05 or 2, who went along with this, if they were to come out right now and say, I can't do this anymore. A year ago, I was a true believer. I was first in line to get the shots. The mandate came out. I ordered all my troops to get the shots. And I truly believe that I was doing the right thing. I truly believe that this was about health and this was about readiness. And now I see that none of that was true. I can't believe DOD is still going on with this, and I will no longer be a part of this. You know, there's my eagle. I'm walking out, or whatever. I think that would be truly devastating. I don't see any O6s or O5 commanders right now that went along with this that have since changed their mind. If they're there, their stories aren't percolating up. And I would think that those stories would gain immediate traction. So my assumption is that that is not happening.
Right.
Brett, let me say,
just without them doing so, we're just quietly bleeding out, you know, and it's really a shame, because I do believe that by and large that people are just making comfort-based decisions, you know, whatever their reason being, it's a comfort-based decision. And, you know, there's probably a societal at large reason to discuss some of that. But, you know, Mark, I'll turn it over to you, because I know you have the next question there, so I'll let you go.
Yeah. Yeah. From my perspective, I see a lot of, like what you were talking about, a lot of these individuals making the next rank, whether it's colonel, right? Colonel, lieutenant colonel. Mm-hmm. And they're just saying, screw it, I'm out of here. Like, I don't even want it. Right. My next door neighbor, I mean, he made lieutenant colonel, and he was like, nah, I'm all set. I'm retiring. I'm done. But I wanted to switch gears a little bit and touch about the recent happenings with the senators now coming out all of the sudden after a year plus some change. And now your perspective on what they're doing to end the shot mandate, apparently, is what it sounds like it's all about.
Yeah. So what it looks like, you know, to the best of my understanding of the issue, is that there is a group of senators, you know, GOP senators, that have come together and have said basically that they're going to use the NDAA as leverage to place pressure on DOD to get DOD to rescind the mandate. Now, on the one hand, I applaud that. I think that that is a move in the right direction. On the other hand, though, I what I hear is a lot of people jumping up and down and using very vigorous and energetic language to propose a very mediocre and lukewarm position, you know. But if you jump up and down, you can fool people into think that you're pushing an agenda that is something that is far more than it actually is. So if DOD were to, let's say DOD rescinded the mandate tomorrow, and the latest I saw a couple hours ago was that DOD was still holding fast to the mandate and resisting these senators. We'll see what happens in the next couple of days. But even if DOD were to rescind the mandate tomorrow, and if DOD were to reinstate everyone that had been wrongfully separated, that's a minor victory. Like, that is step one. We have got to take a comprehensive look at how we got here. Because here's the problem that I have, and I know I'm speaking to people who see this the same way that I do, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole, because I think you guys have already touched on this, but the order was illegal completely. I mean, based on fraud. We're not just going to sweep that under the rug and, you know, rescind the mandate and say, wow, that was a bad policy. We really got that one wrong. Sorry, guys. Because then if we do that, here's what's going to happen. You're going to, so think about the soldier who got wrongfully separated, you know, like a young parent, right? And so let's say he moves across the country to a different state to get a new job. He shows up there. His kids are in school. His wife's got a new job. He's got a new job. He has moved on with his life, he and his family. Well, what's going to happen? I mean, we're going to call him on the phone, and we're going to say, hey, good news. We fixed everything. All good. No worries. Just move back, put your uniform back on, and good to go. I mean, we have completely disrupted this guy's life. We treated him like a pariah. We booted him out the door, probably without even the dignity of an honorable discharge, you know, sent him packing without a paycheck. He's got to worry about what his next job's going to be. And now we're just going to pretend like we're doing him a favor by bringing him back, you know, as if it just never happened. To me, that is, it's almost insulting. So one, I remain unconvinced that this is not mere politicking of, you know, one political party vis-a-vis the other. And the other thing is that I remain unconvinced that that this has anything to do with figuring out the truth or figuring out how we got to this position. And I'm just going to say it, because now you guys have got me on a rant, that when we talk about weak, cowardly leaders in the military, I mean, do we somehow think that there aren't weak, cowardly leaders in Congress? I mean, I would like to think that the currently serving, you know, airman, soldier, whatever, has some legit representation amongst his senators and congressmen. But I'm not seeing that. I'm hearing a lot of talk. I'm curious to see if there's actually going to be real action behind that talk.
Just based on that one rant, I feel like we can do a part two and a part three. Just that, on that, on that alone.
Yeah, you guys got me riled up now.
No, because I was going to ask. I was like, am I crazy to think that you? I think you answered it. But to rescind the mandate isn't it? Like we have, I think the numbers are like 95% vaccinated, 5% obviously 5% unvaccinated. So it's like, okay, you rescind the mandate, but you're really only taking care of a small percentage. And the mandate, by the way, is still for the original two shots. We're talking the ones that came out way back when. Yes. So what are we talking about? You send the mandate. What are we doing about boosters? What are we doing about the vaccine injuries? Like what does it mean to, like at this point, what does it mean to rescind the mandate? Sure. I don't even know, right? And then you're talking about, I feel like we're always talking about the same topics or symptoms of the root cause. And the root cause is leadership. Or maybe it's even the promotion system. You know, I interviewed Stu Scheller. He has that book, Crisis of Command, and he lays out his philosophy on what the problems are. And every time I talk to, you know, guys of your caliber, it's like, yeah, that's the problem. The problem is the way we're promoting it. The problem is it's culture as well. And it's who we're promoting. I remember during sequestration, when I was a lieutenant, the guys I looked up to were the guys that were leaving. Those were the guys that were like, ah, I'm going to take my paycheck. I'm going to get out of the military. The guys you would want to stay in, the true leaders, you know, it's like, now I'm ranting a little bit. Sorry about that. But, you know, you talk about the guys that created history, like the generals, the Doolittles, the Hap Arnolds. I mean, I'm talking Air Force stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But the those guys I don't think they make it in today's military. Like a Robin Olds, that guy was an asshole. That guy doesn't make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, that's a fantastic assessment. So when I look at the top, right, I see criminals. When I look at, I see the top of the structure, right, criminals. And I say that because I have two huge problems with what's going on. One is the FDA approval. Like clearly FDA was in collusion with DOD. I mean, come on. And the other problem
is anthrax. Since anthrax.
Right. And the other problem that I have is, and Martin was all about this, that's the DMED data, which there's all this evidence that has been covered up. So the signals have been there, like in huge neon lights, problem.
And let me just jump in real quick. They're still there. So even after whatever happened, they're still there. We still see the signals. We've been screaming about the VAERS data the entire time. Forget DMED for a second. For the general populace out there who we're speaking to, the American people, mm-hmm. we've had the VAERS data. This is the government CDC's own data. And these officials have had this too. They've seen it. It's knowingly at this point. And I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. Absolutely. So in my mind, this is where I can't allow people to claim ignorance anymore. You know, again, if I'm viewing it charitably, maybe I would say in August of 2021, when the mandate was first put out. Okay, sure, maybe, right? But now, just with everything that we've heard about, what I don't understand is how are there not commanders, whether it's an O3 or an O10, how are there not commanders who are so uncomfortable with what's going on that they're at least going to their next higher commander behind closed doors and saying, sir, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? I am uncomfortable with what's going on. And I'll go back to what David said earlier, the whole like legal cleared it. I mean, that is, so there's a retired colonel that I got into a discussion with, and his rationale for the whole thing was he literally only would say to me, it's a legal order. And I would say, no, it's not. It's illegal because of, and I'd explain the reasons. And he would come back with, it's illegal. Basically, he was saying it's a legal order because it's a legal order, which means it's a legal order because they, the ones who gave the order, have said that it's legal. I mean, that's where we're at. Those who gave the order have said that it's legal. That's at the end of the day, that's what we're saying. And there are commanders at every level who say that argument is enough for me to tell myself that what I'm doing is correct and is justifiable.
And it's like we've investigated ourselves and we found no wrongdoing. Right.
But in fact, not only have we exonerated ourselves, we are actually going to award ourselves for, you know, good conduct, right?
You know, I actually looked up, I wanted to know, like, okay, it's a legal order. Got it. You're going to repeat that. You're going to pair it. What's a legal order? So the court's martial manual actually defines it. And one of the, there's like five elements to, you know, these are the things that are a legal order. One of the elements says a legal order can't contradict, I forget the exact verbiage, you can't contradict the constitutional or statutory right. So look, if it's already a law and you're being ordered against the law, then it's not a lawful order. I don't care if you, oh, but it's interchangeable because of same formula. Well, the law doesn't say it's interchangeable because of the same formula. The law says it's interchangeable because you have two licensed products. So this idea that you're going to interchange an, you know, emergency use experimental product with a fully licensed, I'm air quoting for those that can't see. It's what? how did we get here? It's wild. But
so you bring up a great point. So I was a battalion commander. So I harp on commanders because you guys know that in the U.S. military, whether it's Army or wherever, we are very, very commander-centric. And I would say rightfully so. There's a lot of responsibility on commanders. And some of that responsibility is legal because of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But right behind the commanders, I would say, where are our lawyers? Where are the lawyers that should also be saying, no deal, like this is, you know, this is not legal. Where are they at?
Well, you know? Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, thanks, Brad. You know, so you talk about the lawyers, and then the other thing that I was thinking about with this. So one point on the lawyers is that they've suppressed medical discussions on this. So, you know, I bring up, you know, these challenges to my senior medical officers, you know, in charge of you know, 20,000 personnel, and they're, you know, they're the patient advocate for 20,000 personnel. And I bring them the case studies and all the information, and they refuse to talk to me. You know, so based off of legal recommendations. So there's that one thing. And then, you know, the other thing that I'm highly concerned on this is that just in the beginning of this, you know, way back even 2 years ago, this decision was predicated on medical's recommendation. You know, so you as a battalion commander, I come to you as your senior medical advisor, and I say, hey, sir, there's big concerns here. And we all jump off onto this roller coaster together based on a medical decision. How do we walk that back? And where does that line in the sand goes? Because, you know, from my experience with commanders, they're going to default because they don't know the medicine. And typically when medical brings up a good, you know, hey, this is my recommendation, it's hard for them to refute because they're not the medical expert.
Sure.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
It just kind of, you know, the legal thing is really highly concerning to me, because now the free that is involved with medicine is not occurring. We're not practicing medicine anymore because legal says don't talk to them. Don't, you know, they're bringing up information. Don't talk to them about it. Over to you, David.
Sorry, Brad, you ready for a radical idea?
Let me hear it.
Legal reform. Okay. Just like commanders lost their right to oversee sexual assault cases because they were messing it up, I think they're going to lose their, I mean, I don't even know how you get there because it's such a command thing, such a military thing to have, you know, military legal. But, you know, I've called JAGs and every time I've called a JAG officer to talk legal, they say, well, I represent the commander. I don't represent you. I'm here to keep the commander out of trouble. And it's like, but you're failing at that job. You're absolutely failing at your job. So what does that look like in the future? I don't know. Is it legal reform? Does the military lose its right to have their own legal system when it can be so corruptible? It can be taken, you know, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is it takes one person from the top to steamroll the entire system. So what do we do in the future? Is it an oversight committee? Is it, you know, civilian legal? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
That is a fantastic question. I don't know the answer. I think that's a fantastic question. And one of the things that I think we need to do is from our side, right? We have to figure out, we can't answer this tonight, obviously, but just kind of, you know, food for thought is for our side, what does victory look like? You know, because at the end of the day, this is much bigger than COVID, because we saw that this was used by powerful players who did a lot to destroy our much more than just the military. I mean, just, you know, the lockdowns, the usurpation of science. I mean, there's a lot riding on this. So for people who think this is not a big deal, just, you know, get in line, take a shot, shut up. No, we are literally talking about the freedom of our nation and the Republican principles that are like bedrock principles that our nation was founded upon. That's really what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. And there has to be something provided, you know, that it's palatable, you know, something that they can anchor on to be like, okay, that is a way forward, because without that being provided, everybody's going to continue to spin. They're going to continue to double down. We're going to continue to wonder why. And the general populace is at the mercy of all that, and looking from the outside in, probably equally as baffled, but not fully understanding it, because they're outside the organization.
Yep.
Any parting shots there from Mark or David? Anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, from David, I got something real quick. Just Brad, what you're talking about with the science. So I feel like every sector in life is standing up. The officers standing up in the military. There's doctors standing up in the medical community, and also there are professors and you know, researchers standing up in their community as well. And recently, it's Greg Glassman's, you know, kind of thing that they're getting started. It's called the Broken Science Initiative. So they are arguing that, you know, this idea that trust the science. What is trust the science? What does that even mean, the science? So these guys are, you know, standing up in the research community as well and saying like, no, we got to get back to our roots, because what science is unrecognizable right now with the way they're pushing. Trust the science, follow the science. So anyway, that's all I got.
I completely agree. Yes.
Yeah. The trust the science, safe and effective narrative. We gotta stop that, because clearly it is neither of those, and trust the science is not, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a punchline that takes us down. So Brad, before we wrap up today, I just want to, how do the listeners touch base with you? Where do they find you? Where do they follow you? And what is up next? Because I know you've had a lot of things going on with you.
Yeah. So I would say right now the easiest, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, 2 weeks ago I would not have been able to say this, but probably Twitter. You know, I had to join Twitter like 2 weeks ago. So that's probably the easiest way to find me. So at Brad Miller 1010, so 1010, at Brad Miller 1010. And I'll tell you, I've had a lot of support. A lot of people have reached out to me, and it's been fantastic. I'm trying to build a website that'll get up at some point, and then, you know, we'll figure out what the way ahead is. But yeah, thanks for asking.
Awesome. And then just one last parting shot before we run out of time today. I just want to remind the listeners, please go to the Truth for Health Foundation website, get engaged there, look at the resources. I'd also just, you know, look at the show notes for this show today. There's going to be different links to different things we've discussed. There's going to be some links to a petition. We need to get Congress to end these mandates. And we just ask you, you know, just take it upon yourselves to start engaging with your congressmen, your senators, your representatives, to push on the government, and you know, let your voices be heard, let our voices be heard, and you got to multiply this dialogue. You know, I think a lot of times we could sit here and talk within our own circles, but that's all. We're self-licking ice cream cone, and we can't be that. We cannot be in our own little bubble. We have to break out of that bubble. We got to have meaningful dialogue with those around us, people that maybe are not aware of this information. And we got to encourage people not to be apathetic for their feelings. And what I mean by that, it's pretty easy in social media today, and just the way we receive information. You swipe up if you like it, whatever, you swipe down. You can easily develop your own assessment of what something is and whether you care to listen to it within just, you know, a fraction of seconds. We got to learn to put ourselves in that person's role and hear what they're saying, feel what they're saying, and understand truly what it is that's being said and the magnitude of what it is. And we got to break that mold, and it's a societal thing. And we got to encourage people to be the same people in public that they are in private. You know, you could have a whole different algorithm feeding you information online. You go to work and you act like nothing's wrong, and you smile at your coworkers as they're slamming whistleblowers or telling everybody that it's safe and effective. Let's talk about it. start having meaningful dialogue. Don't be ashamed of your beliefs. Stay engaged and stay encouraged. Any parting shots from anybody else out there?
Yeah, I just real quick, Brad, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. God bless you. Thank you for your, just honorable service and your continued service to our nation, frankly, because your voice is so incredibly powerful. And we absolutely thank you from the bottom of our hearts. God bless you. God bless your family. David Beckerman, thanks for coming on the show and being a co-host. If again, reminder, go down in the show notes and check out his presentation, an absolute wonderful chronological order of events from what the Department of Defense did to its service members. So check that out in the show notes below. God bless y'all out there and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us today on the Whistleblower Report. From Truth for Health Foundation. Check out our website, www.truthforhealth.org. Join our crusade. We are silent no more. We urge you to sign up for our email alerts, donate to support our legal defense work to secure the human and civil rights secured by law, and to live our lives in accordance with the U.S. Constitution and God's truth. We are here to bring you hope and solutions for such a time as this, with all that is assaulting our way of life. Join us and stand strong against the lies and deception, and speak out, get loud, get involved. God bless you. And thank you for joining us.